5, text 13. Pumanai vaiti yadgatva. Bila swadar ghamgato yata. Pratyagdhama vidhaiha. Kim asat kamabhir bhavet. Pumanai vaiti yadgatva. Bila swargam gato yata. Pratyagdhama vidhaiha. Kim asat kamabhir bhavet. Pumanai vaiti yadgatva. Bila swargham gato yata. Pratyak dhamma vidhaiha. Kim asat kamabhir bhavet. Pumanai vaiti yadgatva. Bila swargham gato yata. Pratyagdhama vidariha. Kim asat kamabhir bhavet. Pumanai vaiti yagatva. Bila swargam gato yata. Pratyagdhama vidariha. Kim asat kamabhir bhavet. Mothers, anyone's. Pumana vaiti yagata. Bilasrargam gato yata. Sleepy. Tadama vidavida. Kamabir bhavet. Puman. A human being? Na, not, eva, indeed, eti, comes back, yet, to which, gatwa, having gone, bila swargam, to the region of the lower planetary system known as Patala, gata, gone, yata, like, pratyakdhama, the effulgent spiritual world, avidha, of the unintelligent man, iha, in this material world, kim, what benefit, asat kamabhi, with temporary fruit of activities, bhavet, there can be. Translation in Purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation, Narada Muni had described that there is a bila, or hole, from which, having entered, one does not return. The Haryashvas understood the meaning of this allegory. So this is what they understood. Hardly once has a person who has entered the lower planetary system called Patala been seen to return. Similarly, if one enters a Vaikuntha Dhamma, Pratyak Dhamma, he does not return to this material world. If there is such a place from which, having gone, one does not return to the miserable material condition of life, what is the use of jumping like monkeys in the temporary material world and not seeing or understanding that place? What will be the profit? Purport. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 15, verse 6, yad gatva na nivartante ta dhamma paramamama. There is a region from which, having gone, one does not return to the material world. This region has been repeatedly described elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, verse 9, Krishna says, Jamma karma cha me divyam evam yoveti tat twataha tyaktva deham punarjanma naiti mameti so Arjuna. Quote, one who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but it attains my eternal abode. O Arjuna, that's the end of the quote. If one can properly understand Krishna, who has already been described as the Supreme King in yesterday's verse, he does not return here after giving up his material body. This fact has been described in this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. Puma naiveti yad gatwa. He does not return to this material world, but returns home back to Godhead to live an eternally blissful life of knowledge. Why do people not care about this? What would be the benefit of taking birth again in this material world, sometimes as a human being, sometimes a demigod, and sometimes a cat or dog? What is the benefit of wasting time in this way? Krishna has very definitely asserted in the Bhagavad Gita chapter 8, verse 15, Mamupetya punarjanma dukhalayam shashvatam napnuvanti mahatmana samsiddhim paramam gataha. Quote, after attaining me, the great souls who are yogis in devotion never return to this temporary world, which is full of miseries, because they have attained the highest perfection. That's the end of the quote. One's real concern should be to free himself from the repetition of birth and death and attain the topmost perfection of life by living with the Supreme King in the spiritual world. In these verses, the sons of Daksha repeatedly say, Kimasat kamar bhir bhavet. Quote, what is the use of impermanent fruit of activities? Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So in Narada Muni's little riddle or allegory, he had described a hole which, having entered, one does not return. So now that aspect of the riddle or allegory is being explained. It was understood by the Haryashvas to refer to the spiritual world. The spiritual world is that place which, having gone, no one returns to this material world. And it's being compared here to the Bilaswarga, Gatolyata. That means just like Bilaswarga. Bilaswarga, we heard in the fifth canto, refers to the lower planetary systems. Bilaswarga means actually there are celestial realms. So just as above the earth planet, there's Swargaloka, which is a very celestial place, a place of sense gratification for the demigods. Then below the earth planet, there's Bilaswarga, which is a place of sense gratification, a lot of it too, for the asuras, the demons. So they also enjoy sense gratification. And below the Bilaswarga, there are the hellish planets. So there's a difference between Bilaswarga and hell. Sometimes you think lower planetary system means hell. At least I used to think like that. But there's a difference between the lower planetary systems and hell. Hell is below the lower planetary systems. So the idea here that's been expressed is that just as a person goes to the Bilaswarga, and he is not seen to return because he is enjoying nicely in Bilaswarga. Huh? Just like if you suppose someone goes to some exotic place of sense enjoyment, like the Caribbeans or something. So you say, oh, so-and-so Bhaktan went to the Caribbean, he was not seen to return. Why he is not seen to return? Because he's enjoying sense gratification very nicely. Therefore, he is not seen to return back to the temple. So similarly, someone goes to Bilaswarga, it is not seen that he has returned because he's enjoying a lot of happiness. That's the idea. So similarly, like that, somewhat like that, one is never seen to return from the spiritual world back to this material world because he enjoys great happiness. That's the idea. And that is the great happiness of love. The great happiness that can only be found in love of Godhead, prema. So because of that prema, pratyagdama refers to the spiritual world, the effulgent spiritual world, a world made effulgent by love. Understand? Just like sometimes in the material sense, when someone falls in love, someone may say, you look effulgent, you look different, you're shining, and they may say like this. Of course, it's usually in a very mundane sense, but it's a comparison to help us get an idea. The spiritual world is a place which is effulgent. It is made effulgent by prema, by love. And because of the happiness found only in prema, one is not seeing a return to this material world. Because in this material world, prema is not available. It's only available in the spiritual world or in relationship to truly exalted spiritual personalities like Krishna and his eternal associates, his Nitya Parikar. So one has never tasted that sweetness. So once you taste that sweetness, you realize, oh, there is nothing in comparison to this sweetness. And therefore, you do not return to a place where everything in relationship to that sweet taste is very bitter. Everything in this material world, even the happiness found in Bilaswarga or Swargaloka, is very bitter next to the taste of prema. And therefore, once you taste sweet rice, if you have sweet rice, and before you're used to eating only bitter things like bitter melon. I remember growing up, when my mom had banned all sorts of holidays growing up. We didn't celebrate Christmas, Hanukkah, nothing. Anything that involved gift exchange was banned. It was against our religion. She trained us up really good. She used to tell us like that. This is against our religion. Everything was against our religion. Halloween was against our religion. Christmas was against our religion. Birthdays, celebrating birthdays was against our religion. Everything was against our religion. But there was only one thing that we did celebrate was Passover. At least from the time I was like, you know, from when we were kids until I was maybe 7 or 8, my mom was part of a Hebrew Israelite center in Chicago, like the black Jews basically. And so we used to only celebrate Passover. And Passover is the worst thing to celebrate for a kid. Because it was like these, he knows also, he's Jewish, so. It was for a kid, like the worst, you had to eat something very bitter. You know, you had to go through the ceremony. If you were the firstborn, you know, putting blood over the doorway, it was like this whole ritual was there. And for a kid, it was like, where are the presents, you know? where's the sense enjoyment? So you didn't really get to enjoy. It was a little bitter experience. And then once we kind of gave up that, my mom gave that up, so we also didn't follow. Then other things became a prospect. You could celebrate Halloween or something. And that was more fun. So once you have that more fun, you never think about that other thing, which was bitter in relationship to that new thing that you're getting, that sweet thing, that sweet experience. That's a crude example. It's not meant to serve as a criticism of religion or anything. I'm talking about as a kid, that's how I experienced it. So similarly, next to prema, next to love of God, then all other things taste very bitter. And therefore, having tasted that, you do not return to that bitter kingdom. What is that bitter kingdom? The kingdom of the material world, where there is no love. No one loves each other. Everyone is simply exploiting one another. And they sometimes put a misnomer on it, like love, in order to trick you from realizing what is actually happening. I love you. Just as, you know, I'm really pickpocketing you. Prabhupada would say this. Prabhupada would call the wife. He said the wife is an expert pickpocket. But she will simply say, I love you. And so he's bewildered by that. And then she's simply, give me this, give me that. Prabhupada would give this example. So anyway, another crude example to explain that this is what's going on in the material world. It's a world of exploitation. And naturally, it is a bitter place because of that. Even if someone is not trying to exploit you, we have beginningless experiences of being exploited by the conditioned souls in this material world. And therefore, even when someone is not trying to exploit you, you do not trust that. So this place is always a bitter atmosphere because of this. In the spiritual world, there is no such exploitation tendency. There is only love. And it is that prema that keeps you captured, that keeps you trapped, so to speak, in the spiritual world. So to speak, we can use that language. I'm thinking of a verse that from the Bhagavatam, it's the Navayogindras are speaking to King Nimi. The Navayogindras means 9 sons of Rishabhdev were there. Bharata is famous. He was the first son. Then after them, there were 9 sons who were called, they all became exalted Paramahamsa yogis, devotees. They're called as the Navayogindras, out of Rishabhdev's 100 sons. So, King Nimi had posed several questions to the Navayogindras. One question was about the nature of Vaishnavas. What is the exalted nature of Vaishnavas? What is their speech and so on, their consciousness? So in describing them, their concluding verse about Vaishnavas goes something like, Vishrajati hridayam na yasya saksha Dari avashara bihito pyaghoga nasha. Pranaya rasanaya dritangi padma sabhavati bhagavata pradhana ukta. So this verse says, Hari avashara bihito api. Although unintentionally chanting the holy name of Krishna. Hari avashara bihito means to unintentionally chant the name of Hari. Although unintentionally chanting the name of Hari, aga oga nasha. Hari destroys heaps amounts of sins, his holy name. The reason for saying this point is that to show Krishna is so powerful that even you unintentionally chant his name, then heaps of sins become destroyed. If Krishna's name is so powerful, just imagine how Krishna is so powerful. His name is so powerful that even unintentionally chant it, it can destroy heaps of sin. But that powerful Krishna, Vrishajati Hridayam Na Yasya Sakshat, that powerful Krishna, Sakshat, he's personally appeared in the heart of his devotee. So not just a sportsy means like a vision, but Krishna has personally come and appeared in the heart of his devotee. Vrishajati Hridayam Na, but he cannot leave that heart. He's personally appeared there, but when he tries to get out, he is stuck. He is stuck. He cannot leave that place. Why is it that he's stuck? So then it says, Pranaya Rasanaya Dritangri Padma. That because his Angri Padma, his feet are dritta, his feet are held down or chained down, Rasanaya, by the ropes of love. So this powerful Lord, he's so powerful that even his name can destroy heaps amount of sins. From past, present, and future. That's how powerful the holy name. You chant one holy name, Namabhas, then for all sins will come up in the future also, they will be destroyed by that Namabhas. That's how powerful Krishna is. But that powerful Krishna, he personally appears in the heart of his devotee, and he cannot leave that heart. He's trapped. He's trapped in the heart. Why? Because his feet are chained down by the ropes of love. So one who captures Krishna with the ropes of love becomes captured by Krishna. If you capture Krishna with the ropes of love, then you become captured by Krishna. Just like he cannot move, he will not allow you to move also. Understand that's the idea that I'm trying to say. Just as he cannot move anywhere, so he will not let you go anywhere also. Such is the nature of the rope of love. It's like a special weapon. The goal of life is actually to find out this weapon. The atheists, they try to conquer Krishna, but they're not having proper weapons for conquering Krishna. Their weapons are mental speculation. And the result of mental speculation? Repeated birth and death. But there's another weapon that is possible to conquer Krishna. It's called the chain of love. There's such a thing called the chain of prema. And nature is you can capture Krishna's feet, and so he cannot move, so he will not allow you to move also away from him. This is called being captured by the rope of love. The nature of love is that it binds Krishna to his devotee, and it binds the devotee to Krishna. That's the nature. So really, Pratyagdama, more than it means the kingdom of Krishna, is the kingdom of prema. The spiritual world is actually the kingdom of prema, because prema rules there. Krishna doesn't rule in the spiritual world. That's a misconception. You try to get my point. Don't misunderstand. It's meant to be sweet. The point is that Krishna himself is controlled by love. Even Narayana himself says to Durvas Muni, Ambarish Maharaj, on one verse is there, where he says, Naham atmane asha se ma bhakti sarubhir vina. Without devotees of Krishna, who I am their everything, then naham atmanam asha se, I have no desire to enjoy my transcendental bliss or the opulences in my kingdom. In other words, Narayana himself saying, not even Krishna, what to speak of Krishna? Narayana himself is saying that my kingdom, spiritual world, is made meaningful because of my devotees. And without them, I don't even desire to be in this kingdom also. In other verses there that Narada is speaking, I think that Krishna does not live in Vaikuntha. He does not live in the heart of yogis. These are all misconceptions, understand? Someone says Krishna is Vaikuntha, that's a misconception. Someone says Krishna's in the heart of yogi, that's a really big misconception. He's definitely not there. So where is he? He's in that place where those who have captured him with the ropes of love are chanting his glories. So the spiritual world is made effulgent, it is made meaningful for the Supreme Lord himself because of the presence of sadhus, devotees of Krishna, who have captured him with the rope of love, and therefore he captures them also. Just like he cannot move, he does not allow them to move also. So having fallen to that hole from which you don't return, why you don't return? Because Krishna won't allow you to return. Even if you say, I want to go back to the material world, he's too bad. Because you have captured me with the rope of love, now I'm not going to allow you to leave also. We are eternally bound to one another forever. Just like there's in the Krishna book, there's the gopis are upset with Krishna. So they want to stop thinking about Krishna, stop talking about Krishna. And so they start criticizing Krishna like anything. And saying that we're going to give up this Krishna. But even though we want to give him up, we cannot stop talking about him. We cannot stop thinking about him. This is our disease, they say in this way. Such is the nature of the kingdom of love. Everyone becomes a dancing dog in the hands of Prema Bhakti. So this is why, once having entered the kingdom of love, once you're captured in that way, once one tastes that experience, then there's no returning back to this miserable world of sense gratification. Krishna says it in a simpler way in Bhagavad Gita, Vishayavini Vartante Niraharasya Dehina Rasa Rajan Raso Piyasya Parandrushtana Vartate. Krishna says that someone may restrict his senses from sense objects by some program of practice, austerity, and so on, but his mind is always looking for that loophole just to run over to the sense objects, isn't it? Just like even for us, we do japa. It is. As soon as we get a little bit of time for the mind, immediately, a little bit of space we give, immediately run to the sense objects. Because it is artificial. That's okay. One has to start somewhere, after all. But he said there's another person who never thinks of those things. Why? Because his heart is captured by a higher taste. Highest taste is taste of love. So, kema sat kumabhir bhavet. What is the use of all your fruitive activities if you don't have love? Even in an ordinary material sense, people would appreciate such a statement like that. They wouldn't criticize it, at least. You're working so hard. But what is the use? No one loves you. You also don't love anyone. Then what is the use? You have so much money, so much enjoyment. You have big palaces there, but no one likes you even. Once you speak of love, no one also likes you. They simply want to exploit you. Then what is the use of all your fruitive activities? You cannot have any happiness whatsoever. Either you don't have any love, neither anyone loves you, then you'll be so miserable. Despite having so much opulence, there will be no happiness whatsoever. Isn't it? I know for me, my whole quest for spiritual life was preempted by a search for love. I often have mentioned this even in open discussions. I was looking for love, and I was always observing my friends because I had hoped that I would fall in love. This is the real meaning of falling in love. You fall into a hole of which you don't return. This is mission. The concept of falling in love is mentioned in the Shastras. You fall in love with Krishna. You fall into a hole from which you don't return, the hole of love of God. And I was always looking for that, and I was observing my friends. I had opportunities to do nonsense like any young person, but it had to be pure. Of course, my idea of purity was really messed up. I'm not going to even tell you what it was, but it had to be pure. Whatever it was, it kept me from involving myself in any sort of relationship before I came to Krishna consciousness. And the reason is because I saw everyone was just exploiting each other. I could see my friends. They were always unhappy. And so I had got doubt. There is no love in this material world. I was getting a hunch. Maybe there is no love. So when there is no love, there can be no happiness. There is absolutely no chance to be happy. Even if you have so much. You have so much opulence, so much wealth, beauty. But you have no one to share that with. Krishna himself is saying in the Bhagavatam. So kemapsat kumabhir bhavet. If you don't fall into that hole where there is love without any trace of exploitation, which can only be found in the pratyagdhamma, the spiritual world, then what is the use of your fruitive activity? On account of not finding that, you will be forced into one body after another in search of that. Because all living beings are actually looking for this only. So Rishabhdev, I already mentioned this the other day. Pritirnayavan mayivasudeve namuchate deha yogena tavat. That if you don't develop love for me, Krishna is saying, then you will not be free from accepting one body after another. What is the concept? Why accepting one body? Because we're in search of something. So you don't have to move if you found what you're looking for. But when you haven't found what you're looking for, you keep having to move around. So the whole purpose of material existence is that we're looking for something. We're looking for prema, actually. And not finding that, you keep having to change bodies in search of that. So Rishabhdev's statement is like that. If you don't find it, then na mujita, you'll not get free from this quest of searching for things in the material world, searching for love in the material world. You have to fall into this hole. And of course, usually you think to fall into a hole would be easy. And it is, actually. If one hole is in the ground, it is easy to fall into that hole, but you have to find it. Just like sometimes the example of blind well, I'm now using blind well in a positive sense. Blind well, let's say, represents this hole in the ground, a hole of prema. But blind well is there in a big field. You don't know where it is at. So a huge, gigantic field, someone says, find that hole. Then you fall into it, you'll get prema. But suppose a field is as big as an ocean, huge, vast space, how you will find it? You will not find it anywhere. So similarly, although we're looking for this in the material world, we don't find it anywhere. Why we don't find it? Because the let's say, map to that hole is in the heart of pure devotee of the Lord. So unless you contact sadhu who has that love, then you don't have the map to find it. You will not find it. And that way, kimasat kamambir bhavet. What is the use of all you're doing? Just moving around, jumping like monkeys, Prabhupada says. You're just jumping like monkeys, totally miserable. Yes, so we, this is my appreciation. Jama Karma Prabhupada quotes various verses from the Bhagavad Gita, more or less expressing the same point. Once you attain the spiritual world, you do not come back. Jama Karma Chime Divyam. If you understand the nature of my birth and activities, what is the nature of Krishna activity? All Krishna activities compelled by prema. Just like in the material world, all of our activities are compelled by? Huh? Lust, yeah, kama. Fear. Bayam dutiya binivesha tascha. Ishara petasha vipariyo ashmitahi. Srimad Bhagavatam, everything we do in this world is compelled by fear, actually. Isn't it? All movement, just analyze. Everything that we do is compelled by fear of being accepted or not being accepted, fear of being rejected. Fear of survival, fear of not meeting my expectations or meeting the expectations of others. So many fears move our hearts in this material, isn't it? So many fears. If you have to just sit down and analyze for 10 minutes, you will come up with 3-4 pages of fears that compel your actions in this world. But in Krishna's karma, Krishna karma and all his activities, they're all compelled by prema. Everything he's doing is moved by prema. So, jama karma chime divyam evam yo veti tatutaha, if you can understand that, then you can also find that hole, you fall into it, you never come back to this miserable material world. So, these are some insights on this verse. Anyone want to say anything? Questions? Okay, 1, 2.
Yes, Prabhu, Hare Krishna. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, we find a definition of what is priti, spiritual love, that although there's every reason for a relationship to be broken, still one does not abandon that relationship.
Yeah, I like that definition. And,
it's a kind of a mysterious definition because in the spiritual world, everyone is free of envy, lust, and greed. So there's really no reason to break a relationship with Krishna. Everyone is, you know, part of his, is within his internal energy and is completely in love with him. And from Krishna's point of view, why would he want to break a relationship with his part and parcels? So I'm wondering why that definition is chosen by the acharyas.
I cannot say. I have to ask them. But if I had to philosophically speculate where there's some room for that, according to Prabhupada, I would say that it's just a way to express love. See, when you have to express something very subtle, you have to use poetry to do it. Otherwise, there's no way. In other words, it's not just an intellectual affair that you're going to understand it. When you're dealing with a subjective reality, you need subtle things to express it. So it's not just a purely intellectual thing that someone can get. Just like if you try to purely intellectually express to me how you fell in love with someone, I'll not be able to understand it intellectually. So then you have to use metaphors and similes, you know, in order to give expression to that subjective experience. And that still will be incomplete, but it can only create an idea of what it is for the other individual who's hearing about it. So similarly, when we read the Shastras dealing with rasa and so on, You see, so much poetry is there. Poetry is used to express what's happening in Leela. And that poetry, of course, doesn't give a perfect understanding of what's actually going on. It can't, because you can't perfectly express anything subjective. It's impossible. But you can only give a sense of what it is. And so that verse wants to help us explain what is the nature of love. So just to help us to appreciate how strongly the hearts are tied to each other, it will express in this way. Even if there was some reason for that relationship to be broken, it is not broken. That is the nature of love. That even if there was some reason for it to be broken, then it cannot be broken. Now, if you want to analyze intellectually what is the nature of prema, there would be no reason for it to break. Of course, there would be no reason to break it. But this is just to help reinforce the depth of what prema actually is. Because, like any mundane word, the word love also conveys a lot of mundane ideas. And so to help us not confound the mundane love with the spiritual love, so then so many verses will talk about it in various angles of vision to help us get a clarity of what prema actually is. So prema is such that even if there was some reason to break it, that relationship will not be broken. That's the nature of love. In the material world, if there's some really good reason to break the relationship, it will be broken. And it happens all the time. So the so-called people are changing their position of love all the time. And it's not prema.
Eighth verse, there is the reference that, my dear Krishna, even if you make me brokenhearted. So if there is love, there's no concept of breaking the other person's heart. As I said, it's an appreciation. Behind that is the sense of accepting Krishna's supreme independence. Because in love, on the material side, two persons become obliged to each other. And in that sense, they don't exert their independence. However, unconditional love is to recognize that Krishna is supremely independent. He can do anything he likes. For example, when Krishna left Vrindavan and went away to Dwaraka and Mathura with the promise that he would come back, and he never came back. That's a reason for a relationship to be broken. But they didn't break. There's a reason. He never kept his promise. He just went away. But that's, in fact, that love became more enhanced. So it's to accept and give Krishna that full independence. Not that we are giving Krishna. He is anyway fully independent. It's that acceptance of that full independence. You can do as you like. It does not matter.
Okay, Jeremy had a question. Yeah, Jeremy.
Hare Krishna. I just have two questions, if I could. First is about Prabhupada's translations. He does the Sanskrit, the word for word, and of course the purports. In this case, he mentions, you know, jumping around like monkeys, but I don't see that in the word for word translation. And I also think of a couple weeks ago that like friend or fraternity was listed in the word for word translation several times. Mm-hmm. It wasn't in the translation, but then in the purports, he talked about, I think, the two friendly birds on the branches. That's my first question.
Well, two things. One thing, when translating Sanskrit literature, all translators will also refer to pre-modern commentaries in order to make their translations. Because to translate Sanskrit into English is very tough, because you can translate like in a literal sort of sense, but then you will lose all the feeling of the verse. That's such as the difficulty in translation. So acharyas, especially Vaishnava acharyas, they use the commentaries of previous acharyas in order to make their own translations for the verse, so that we can also get the feeling of the verse and not just some like dry. Because like, if you read a scholarly Sanskrit translation, many times you can't understand what's actually happening. I don't know, I mean, before I read Prabhupada's Gita, I read someone else's Gita, which is a scholarly presentation of Gita, and you didn't know what was going on. It just sounded like word jugglery, you know? and you didn't get the feeling of what was actually happening with the characters in Bhagavad Gita and so on. Then when I read Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, it was all very clear, very simple, because Prabhupada's not just going to give you some like very strict rendition translation, but he's going to give you the feel of the verse also as it is understood by the previous acharya. So oftentimes I've noticed this also in Prabhupada's books, and because I have some of the commentaries of some of the other acharyas in Bhagavatam, when I look at their commentaries, they would mention things like this that aren't mentioned in the verse itself. Like the monkeys, for example, it will come in there either in their commentary or in their translation of the verse. So when Prabhupada is giving his translation of the verse, he would include that which he's received from the previous acharyas and his own translation. That way you get the feel of the verse, you get the knowledge of the previous acharyas, you get a greater clarity on what is actually being discussed. Like that.
So the other one is about not coming back once reaching the spiritual worlds. I think, I can't remember who we heard it from a week or two ago, about how even if we are associating with Krishna in the spiritual world, that sometimes we join with him to perform lilas in the material world. Is this somehow different? Is it different than falling from the spiritual world?
Yes. Prabhupada actually specifically explains this in the seventh canto, first chapter, where in the case of Jai and Vijay were the doorkeepers of Vaikuntha. And it appears that they were cursed by some brahmanas, and because of that curse, they, Narada Muni says, Padachuta, they fell from Vaikuntha. But Prabhupada clarifies in his purport in the first chapter, seventh canto, that that's not possible. He says, it's a fact, his words, it's a fact that no one can fall from Vaikuntha. So he said we should understand that their coming to the material world was due to the influence of the yogamaya energy. So then he quotes Bhagavad Gita. He says, just as Krishna comes by the influence of his internal potency. So the residents of the spiritual world, they also come by the influence of Krishna's internal potency. Otherwise, then he says, otherwise it is a fact that no one can fall from Vaikuntha.
Does that apply to, say, Bhakti Siddhanta?
Sure, it applies to all devotees.
All
the acharyas. We accept them as nitya siddhas, so it will apply to all of them. They come by another spiritual, and therefore, in their lives, they, you see such incredible things are going on that are just like humanly impossible. Yeah, at least as far as we can understand, humanly impossible. Yeah, some other Asikamanji wanted to ask something.
Most of the times, at least, I've noticed that we may not be aware, even after we have come into devotional service, like you were, that we're looking for love. Even Bhagavad Gita says so. The other four reasons are not that. So how does a devotee come to the understanding first that that is actually what we're looking for? And then when it is available, we are often looking for it based on our understanding of what it should be. And obviously nothing will match up because it's typically utopic in its nature and it doesn't exist. So how can one move from that position to actually starting to feel the love that's there and understanding the nature of Krishna's love? And once that is it, you know, somehow it touches the heart, then there is the flakiness as we go through our devotional service of, oh, I can feel it, now I don't, and then I can, and then I don't, to then steadily experience it, or even the ways to go back and feel it into from a strong position when you're then weak, to pull those emotions out. And so.
Yeah. He said, he loves me, he loves me not, he loves me not. I think my way of looking at a lot of these subjects is probably somewhat dry and technical, but I think the answer can be found in one word, or maybe two, sadhu sangha, or devotee. The answer is found in both. The first question is, how do you come to be aware that this is actually the goal of our lives? At least in the Gaudiya tradition, it's something that's very heavily underscored in all the literatures of our acharyas, including Srila Prabhupada, especially when you come to Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is, in one sense, the main literature for Gaudiya Vaishnavas, Bhagavatam is, but CC is the Gaudiya's perspective of the Bhagavatam. And so in CC, you get the essence of Bhagavatam as understood by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the Gaudiya Acharyas. And there, the message of prema is so heavily underscored that the only way you could miss it is if you were sleeping. So, or you just, as you said, because of our ignorance, we don't know that's what we're looking for, so we're quite covered. So even when we study the literatures, then we don't catch up that point. So then, and that the answer from my understanding of it and my experience of this also, is that it lies in sadhus who bring out our faith to understand that higher reality. Because prema, love, spiritual love, is transcendental. And therefore, our only access to things transcendental in the material world is through by oral reception. Otherwise, there's absolutely no access to it. Our beginning access to the plane of transcendence from the conditioned life is through the ears. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta makes this statement. So it is sadhus who speak, who experience this love, and by experiencing, who underscored in their expressions to the people of this world. And by hearing that vibration, our consciousness is brought up to that plane. At least it's brought up to that plane. Our intelligence at least is brought up to that plane, and our consciousness begins to understand that this is actually what I'm looking for. And then as we start trying to move towards that goal of life, as you say, we experience this unsteadiness in our movement. For me, the way I normally look at a lot of these issues, like I said, a little technical, that's due to the influence of our anarthas. But our anarthas do not, they create obstacles in our movement towards the goal of love, but they cannot stop it if that's really what our highest ideal is. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that the soul is filled with faith in chapter 17. And then he says that you will become your faith. So whatever, and the idea of that verse is that whatever deity you place your faith in, then you will become like that. And so the expression of Krishna is that basically if that is your ideal, your highest ideal, then until you fully embody that ideal, your faith will move you towards that ideal. This is chapter 17, verse 3. Shraddhamaya Ayam Purusha, the soul is filled with faith. And whoever is his deity of worship, then his faith will move him towards embodying that deity, so to speak. Until he has done that, he will continue to move. The anarthas will come up, obstacles will come up, and so on. But it can't stop his movement if his highest ideal is love and so on. So then, what I'm trying to say is that, yes, we will go through the anarthanivritti process. And then that is part of the path of love as given to us by the acharyas. And then we move into the stage of nishcha, where we become more steady in the movement of our heart. Then to the stage of ruchi, where we start to gain some tangible ground and what that actually is. And then, you know, and so on. Asakti and then bhava, the land of no return. So until then, our access to the realm of love, to the nature of what it is, can only be gained by the association of sadhus, and therefore through the process of hearing. And therefore we go on hearing about this again and again and again. And as we move throughout our day because of our conditioned life, we become again covered over. Again, we have to hear. Again, it has to become clarified for us until it really becomes our highest ideal. And once it becomes our highest ideal, we will actually move towards that ideal until we completely embody it. That's the presentation of Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, Mahaprabhu also. So our deity, therefore we worship Krishna. Krishna means the deity of love. And so until we actually embody all that Krishna embodies, in a sense, then our movement will continue to move through all the obstacles also. But we can only gain that faith in that ideal through the process, through hearing from sadhus, who themselves experienced that or who themselves have that ideal from themselves. So that's how I kind of understand these sort of topics. I know on a personal level, my appreciation, although I knew I was looking for love, after I came to Krishna consciousness, It became less about love and more about just like defeating people on the street with Bhagavad Gita. That was like really where I found the nectar. And to be honest with you, and when I would go distributing books on campuses and so on, I would just go to the debate with the students. I didn't care if they got a book or not. That was like really not that important. That I was able to defeat them with Bhagavad Gita was everything. And I was kind of moving on like this for some few years. And then in 2007, when I got a chance to go to Vrindavan and associate with Ayendra Prabhu, I got a sense of something. There was more, something more in spiritual life than just defeating people with Bhagavad Gita. And then when I started hearing some lectures from Ayendra Prabhu, because of my inspiration from him, then it became, from the very first lecture that I heard from him, it became very apparent that of the goal of love of Krishna consciousness. Then what was that actual love? How to understand that? That my approach to Bhagavatam changed like 180 after that, after hearing that one lecture. So then I was wanting to search out, wait, where is this message in the... Because he was giving, the first lecture I heard was a Bhagavatam lecture. And Prabhupada's purport was such that I'm like, how did he find all of that in that one little purport? That's not there. So that really intrigued me when I started to approach the Bhagavatam. Like literally 180, my whole approach to Bhagavatam changed. And I started to look for that message which I had gotten from Ayendra Prabhu. So therefore, in my understanding of the Shastra and also my practical experience, it came from hearing from sadhus. Now, I obviously am not an embodiment of love. But I can say that that has become my highest ideal. And so although I have so many anarthas and so on, I'm not forgetful of my highest aim in Krishna consciousness. So I have confidence that sooner or later, I'm pretty sure not this life, I'm pretty confident about that, but sooner or later, that my ideal, my faith in that ideal will move me toward that ideal until I fully embody it in whatever life. So that's how I understand it shastrically, that's how I understand it experientially also. It's the association of sadhus which gives access to sort of transcendental things which are lofty and hard to understand or appreciate. And so that's all I can say. I always feel comfortable. Yes.
I really don't need a microphone.
Is really big. Thank you so much for your lectures. Very nice. I appreciate it. Hare Krishna. You were saying that once you get to the spiritual world, you never come back to the material world. That's what was in the purport, Prabhupada's purport. So when we were in the spiritual world, why did we come here then? How did we get here? Once you're there, you don't. And I know that's probably a famous question, but can you answer that for me?
To be honest with you, I don't mind giving an answer, but my answer is a little controversial, so I can't say it in a class context, unfortunately.
You also made mention that that Krishna is in the heart. But then somewhere in your lecture, you said that's a misnomer. Krishna is not really in the heart. Oh, are you saying Narayan is in the heart?
No.
I got confused.
There's a verse that's quoted. Prabhupada quotes it also. It's in the Prabhupada Shloka book. It's Narada is speaking. I don't know to whom he's speaking. But Narada makes a point that Krishna, the Lord, is not in Vaikuntha. He is not in the heart of the yogis. But he is in that place where his devotees congregate to glorify him. So that doesn't mean that Narayana is actually not in Vaikuntha, but it's just to underscore the beauty of Krishna's devotees, that Krishna is really where his devotees are at. Huh? If his devotees aren't involved, then he's not involved. So to kind of underscore this reality of the position of a Vaishnava, because in the neophyte stage of devotion, this is discussed in the Bhagavatam, chapter 2 also, of the 11th canto, the tendency is to see only God, but not to see Vaishnavas, not to see sadhus. That's the tendency. It is about our relationship with God. Huh? So I like this analogy. It is just like if you are standing far away from a mountain, then you can only see the mountain peak. Huh? When you're far away from a mountain, you can only see the mountain peak. But if you have to try to approach that peak, then you see so many smaller mountains in which you have your prospect to reach that highest peak, isn't it? So similarly, when you are far away from Krishna, it is about you and Krishna. But if you actually try to move towards Krishna, then you see that your prospect is with so many Vaishnavas. Otherwise, it is not with Krishna directly. Another example that is also in the same way, it's very beautiful, is if you are far away from a forest, let's say you're in an airplane, a helicopter, and you look at a forest from up top, then it just looks like one sort of homogeneous green stuff, isn't it? But if you actually enter into the forest, you see there's so many trees are there. So when you're far away from Krishna, it looks like it's just Krishna, you and Krishna. But if you enter inside Krishna consciousness, then you see, oh, there's so many entities here. So in a similar way, because of the tendency of the novitiate in spiritual life to only see him and Krishna, he doesn't see anyone else. So to underscore the high position of a Vaishnava, you will hear such verses like this all the time, glorifying Vaishnavas. That Krishna's not in Vaikuntha. Why are you trying to get him in Vaikuntha? You're looking in the wrong place. He's also not in the heart. You're doing sitting there, drilling the breath. You'll not find him there also. Well, where can I find them? See where those devotees are over there, singing and glorifying him? He can be found there. Then you see, oh, my prospect is with sadhus, actually. My prospect with Krishna is not with trying to directly approach him, but is in trying to approach sadhus who have, as I already mentioned, captured the Lord with the rope of love. So in this way, the Shastras will try to help. In fact, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in Jiva Dharma that the whole reason of Shastra is to point our face towards sadhus. In Jiva Dharma, he gives this statement in the earlier chapters. He says the whole purpose of Shastra is actually to turn our attention towards sadhus. And in so many ways, the Shastras will be glorifying the sadhus. So our prospect in love, as Mother Rasika Manjari was bringing up, our prospect in attaining Krishna is in our association with a sadhu, who is really capturing the Lord with the heart of love.
I'm not the servant of Krishna, I'm the servant of the servant of the servant.
Yes,
that, like
yes,
that,
that's
that
another
essence.
Way we express it.
Last question. What was the question? So when we go to the spiritual world, do we know that Krishna is God? So many Leelas I read, they really don't understand that Krishna is God. Like the cowherd boys are playing with Krishna. He's just a friend. They don't know he's God. So when we go back to the spiritual world, will we realize that Krishna is God?
Well, yes and no. In Vaikuntha Dham, it is very clear that Lord Narayana is the Supreme Lord. In Goloka Dham, they also come to know of Krishna's godhood. Because Krishna will do many things right in front of them. But they don't give much importance to that. That is the difference in Goloka Dham. The nature of love creates a sort of divine ignorance. A divine ignorance in Krishna and a divine ignorance in his devotees also. And this is discussed by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in another literature called Raghavarta Chandrika. He's speaking about the spiritual reality. So love creates a sort of divine ignorance in everyone there. So the nature is that Krishna will do something very godly. Like one time when Mother Krishna was eating dirt and he was defeating all the cowherd boys. So they got a little mad, you know. So they went and told on Krishna. Krishna's eating dirt to get him in trouble. So then Krishna said, they just want to get me in trouble. I have not actually eaten any dirt. So Mother Yashoda said, open your mouth, let me see. So when he opened his mouth, she could see all the cosmos in his mouth. And she could also see herself looking in Krishna's mouth, inside Krishna's mouth. So that would be a little bewildering. It's like, and then maybe that Yashoda inside Krishna's mouth, it gets bewildering. So then after she saw this, she started speaking some verses glorifying Krishna's godhood. Then she threw all of that aside. That was not really important. Anyway, don't eat any dirt, you know, chastise them. So even when they come to know Krishna's godhood, that is not an important feature for them. So there are many such accounts where they become aware that Krishna is God. Just like there's a verse, I forget, maybe it's in the CC, I forget exactly where it's at. But a verse where Nanda Maharaj comes to know that Krishna is God. They hear, Krishna is the Supreme Lord. And they say, how nice it is that my son is God. So that underscores my son, you know. It's not that he's God, like you just got news he's God. How nice my son is God, you know. Or the gopis come to hear Krishna is God. Oh, how wonderful my lover is God, you know. So the underscore is their relationship with Krishna,
not his post is God. In other words, God, his God is something like a post. So those who have an intimate relationship with someone, they don't think of that intimate relationship in terms of the post of that person. They think of it in terms of however that intimate relationship is defined, by conjugal love, by friendship, by parenthood. That's how they think of the person in terms of that relationship. They don't think of them in terms of the post that that person has. So godhood is something like a post for those types of devotees in the spiritual world. And so even though they come to know of it, it is of less importance. Just like Krishna lifts Govardhan Hill with his pinky finger. Now he's a 7-year-old boy when this takes place. So he's lifting, how he lift Govardhan? How is a 7-year-old boy going to lift Govardhan Hill? Still, the gopas, they say, oh, we have to help him. Because they think, how will a 7-year-old boy hold up a mountain? Never mind the fact that he picked it up, you know. How will you hold it up? So then they come with their sticks and they want to help Krishna hold up the mountain. Now, what about the fact that he picked it up? Obviously, you can pick it up, he doesn't need anyone's help, you know. But the nature of love is that it creates a sort of divine ignorance. And the material world also creates ignorance, not divine. It creates an ignorance that keeps us accepting one body after another. But you can, by a crude comparison, you can see that sometimes you see like two incompatible personalities, but they fall in love, you know, and in the mundane sense, obviously, I'm saying here. They fall in love and no one can understand it. Like, this doesn't make any sense. And you give so many reasons why it doesn't make sense. So the idea is that love is a little irrational. We often mention, I like to mention, Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes about this. It's a famous thing that I like, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that ours is a kind of a philosophy that reasons to love, that reasons to the point of love. But then after you enter into the kingdom of love, reason is left at the door. Sorry, no entry. This is not a place for reason. It is a place for lovers. So in the realm of lovers, which is what Goloka Dham is, everyone there is a lover. Reason really has no place. Therefore, when scholars and others who underscore reason too much, when they hear about Krishna's pastimes, they feel irritable. And not so much irritable that this is just an imaginative mythology. That's not what irritates them. What irritates them is that people like us believe it. You know, that becomes so agitating for them. You know, we were discussing just the other day. So we hear Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill when he was 7 years old. And we're all like, Jai, Giri Dadaki, Jai, Haribo. We're all ecstatic about it. And the scholar's like, these are grown men thinking this stuff. And then it becomes really irritating if some of them are like educated. You know, they're PhDs and they're scientists. And they're also talking about Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill and they're dancing and they're ecstatic. Then the scholars feel really irritable. I remember hearing a lecture from Rabindra Swarup Prabhu when I first joined. He was giving class about Krishna only in the Sunday feast. And one scholar had come to that class to hear the class. So after the class, he was some verse from Brahma Samhita Chintam, and he was discussing the spiritual world. So the scholar knew Rabindra Swarup. He knew he was a scholar also. So he went to Rabindra Swarup Prabhu and he asked him, do you actually take this stuff literally? He was like really bewildered that Rabindra Swarup Prabhu was just talking about it so unabashedly and with great joy. And so Rabindra Swarup Prabhu said, yes, I accept it literally, but I do not understand its literal purport. That was the answer that he gave to the scholar, because he too much underscores reason. Only things that resonate with reason will be accepted. This is called half-hand logic. Half-hand logic means one hen is there, that hen is giving golden egg. But you have to feed it a lot. So you don't like the feeding part, but you like the golden egg part. So you cut off the head of the hen, and thinking that now I won't have to feed it, I'll get the golden egg. But if you cut off the head of the hen, then you don't get the egg also. So this is called this half-hand logic, where only that which resonates with my reason will be accepted. But that which doesn't resonate with my reason will not be accepted. Therefore, they can never understand the Jama Karma of Krishna. Those who underscore reason as the all-powerful agent for understanding everything, they will never understand Krishna's pastimes, because it can only be understood by lovers. So Jama Karma Chame Divyam Evam Yoveti Tatutaha. Those who understand it in truth, who can understand it in truth? Only those who also love Krishna can understand it in truth. So without getting love, you can't really understand what is happening in the pastime. Even for devotees, when we study the pastimes, many things seem on the foreground very selfish. Just like the example that I like that's easiest to digest this, is the cowherd boys, they one time go to Krishna, And they say that they are hungry, so they want to enjoy some of the, maybe the tall fruits in the Taliban forest. They want to enjoy that. And therefore, you need to go to the Taliban forest and kill Dainuka Sura. One demon was there who was hoarding. He was not letting anyone get the fruits. So we want those fruits, Krishna. And please, can you go over there and kill Dainuka Sura so we can get those? Now, that sounds like a very selfish thing. That's something we would do also. I want something. I go to Krishna. Please, can you get it for me? Kill this person. And that's the thing. It's like, really? Kill that person so that I can get what I want. You know, that's what it is. So when you look at it in the foreground, that's what it kind of looks like. But actually, the acharyas will explain in the commentary. Actually, the cowboys wanted to give those fruits to Krishna. But they knew that if they told Krishna very straightforwardly that Krishna, we want to get these fruits for you, Krishna will not do it. So because Krishna is attached to them, they said the only way to get Krishna to do it is to say, we want the fruits. But it actually was prompted by their attachment to Krishna and want their desire to feed those fruits to Krishna. So when you don't know when you're not a lover, it just looks like a selfish affair is going on. So when they see the pastimes of Krishna with the gopis, they cannot understand what is actually the love that is being exchanged there because they are not lovers. Even for devotees, we're not lovers yet. We don't understand what is love. Then you will misunderstand those leelas also. Spiritual world is only for lovers. People who are too attached to reason, you have to stay at the door. Huh? It's just like sometimes you knock on the door and they have that thing, they shh. What's the code, you know? So spiritual realm is something very similar to that in this sense. That you go, you try to go, but they say, what is the code? Do you have the stuff? Just like some channel, you got the stuff? And the stuff is prema. And if you don't have the stuff, then you have no entry here. You have no business here. Those persons who are too attached to reason, they only thing reason can help us do, Bhakti Noor Thakur explains this. Reason can help us, like I said, ours is a philosophy of love. It reasons to the point of love. And then it obliges us to take up the process of developing love. And then only when you become a lover, you can enter into the club, so to speak, the club of lovers. Otherwise, no entry allowed. We're not going to let anyone up in here disturbing the mood, you know. You come in there with all our material conceptions and attachments and so on. And you see the gopis or the gopas. I like to give this example. Where Krishna is walking in the forest with the gopas, this is described in Brihadbhagavatamrita, and he walks behind a tree. You know, one big tree is there. He walks behind a tree, and all the gopas start getting, like, freaking out. Where's Krishna? Where is he? And they start rolling on the ground and crying in ecstasy. And then Krishna walks from behind the tree and then become, again, calm, you know? Now, suppose we are in the spiritual world with our present consciousness like that. So Krishna walks behind the tree, all the cowboys on the ground rolling around, we would just be looking like, what's going on? Chill out. It's not that serious, you know? And they're like, you're messing up the bob. Get out. You're messing up the mood of the spiritual world here. So therefore, no entry. I mean, we're too attached to reason and analysis. Everything has to make perfect sense. Then that means we're not lovers yet. So it's okay. Go on reasoning, you know, with your 2+2 and, you know, philosophizing, analyzing, and go along with that, mental speculating, taking one body after another, analyzing, and getting bewildered. That doesn't make sense. This doesn't make sense. That doesn't make sense. Go on with that only. In the meantime, we're going to have fun playing leapfrog with Krishna. While you're analyzing, we'll be playing leapfrog with Krishna. When you become a lover, you can also play leapfrog also. Come join us. Okay, thank you all for tolerating me. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.